Welcome to the Winners and Losers radio program, the Friday edition. And today hosting Lucia Valentine, a staff lobbyist for the West Virginia Environmental Council, and here to discuss some of the setbacks and achievements of the West Virginia Environmental Council's activity during the state legislative session, which ran from January through early March or mid-March. And so step right up here, regularly broadcasting here with Karen Valentine, the mother of our guest today, actually, and for the Friday show, focusing on our neighborhood and issues in Jefferson County, Shepherdstown, West Virginia, and related concerns. Thank you. Okay. Well, I only woke up about 20 minutes ago, so.
And you're late.
No, I was. Did you get a chance to forward the invite to Lucia?
Yes, she is planning on joining us. I will send her a text message around 7. She'll be in with us a little after, probably closer to 7:30.
Yeah, okay.
She sent me an email as I was going to sleep that said, "Got it, and Trump's indicted."
Is he really?
That's all she said. That's all she said. And I said, thumbs up, going to sleep.
Well, I haven't seen the, gosh, that's interesting. That should be on the headlines. I didn't. Oh man, let's see here. What is it? What is that, New York Times? Oh, okay. There we go. Let's see. What does it say? Trump indictment puts legal and political systems in new territory. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's so he's been indicted by who here?
I have failed to dive deep into it. My first concern is, does he change the color of his tan to go with an orange suit? I don't know how that works.
Yeah, well, any effort to analyze Trump's personality will
will make you go back to bed.
Yeah, I don't know where you would start or end. It's just okay. So. It doesn't say who's indicting him.
Yeah, I just got the news and closed my eyes and went to sleep, and I haven't delved any further into it myself. So,
my God, see, Trump,
I'm sure we'll know soon enough.
Yeah. Peached, but okay. So, well, my prediction all along has been that the Supreme Court's not going to let him do anything to him. So, but I may be wrong. So we'll see.
I know it's just going to be a whole nother circus.
And I don't know how well it's actually going to work politically, but it might. So, I don't see how you go forward in the country without repressing the so-called MAGA movement. Type of movement.
I think you just said something that is so important, and that we are somehow in this constitution screaming climate that we live in. What you just said was so important. You said, I don't know how it's going to work politically. It shouldn't have anything to do with that. It's breaking laws and being accountable. It doesn't matter who you are, and that's where we really need to break it down. It's just that, everything is a political stunt. And on both sides, that's a bipartisan effort right there, but that's not how it's supposed to be,
You mean it's supposed to be no one is above, some of my friend Mike Boris, Mr. Bill over there at the college poly always said, well, nobody is above the law.
Of course not. And mm-hmm. at the same time, we know laws, and we know if we break them, we may get in trouble. Oh, is she coming in with us?
She's
She's on.
there. Yeah,
Look
right.
at her. She's up and ready to rock and roll.
Got to make sure my bathrobe here is. I haven't been outside besides, the pandemic was so bad, and that we just stayed in so much that I eventually it became a bit embarrassing. So people came to the front door and said, "Oh my God,"
So, what are you trying to tell me? Your bathrobe is permanently connected to your body now?
it was for a while, now, but now I make it till about 9 o'clock and then I get up. But anyway, it's just every day's gravy, Karen, at my age. Every day's gravy. I don't make any complaints at all. So, I
That's how
mean,
it should be. You deserve it.
oh, I mean, I've outlived both my parents. And, you think about that occasionally, so, can you ask for more? I mean, no, not really, so. Lucia, are you, can you hear us? I see your picture. Oh, she's connected, but not quite present yet.
I think she's probably maybe going to listen to our banter for a little while.
Okay.
I don't know.
The
She
other, well,
might text me if she's hearing me.
I mean, my concern about the indicting the president is
The
that
former president.
former president, whatever. You got to be prepared to follow through. If you're going to criminalize him, you're also going to criminalize his supporters because they support what he supported. And so he criminalized 30% of your population. You better be prepared to follow through.
Well, and the message that we need to be really strong about and find a way to get it out that is not partisan is, and this is you and I have talked about this. This is where it goes back to the Clinton years is the scapegoat of, sex or what goes on behind closed doors, personal matters, those things shouldn't come to light, but they are, and they're a big part of it. And I think the way that we handled Clinton set us up for exactly what this is also going to be about and what people are going to scream is that this is a private matter, but we can choose our words wisely, and we can also say then, dressing up as a man and going on stage and singing Elvis songs is also a personal matter, so let's leave all of it alone. You can't pick and choose.
Hold on a second. Let's make sure we're. Yeah. Okay, good. I just wanted to make sure. Let's see. Okay, you're listening to the Winners and Losers radio program on the Enlightened Radio Network. This is www.enlightenedradio.org. And, this is our Friday show with Karen Valentine, my old co-host from what, 5, 6, 8 years ago, whatever it was. And
Who are you calling old? I'm your former co-host.
just yes, well, former, yes, past historical.
I'm historical,
I don't
that's
mean to
true.
call you old. That's just terrible, but every day's gravy for you. That's true. That's a there you go.
Oh, Lord have mercy. I don't know about that, my friend, but yes,
And
it is because I'm here to rant about it.
so I'm so glad you joined me this morning, and I'm looking forward to hearing Lucia's activity with respect to the Environmental Council. Is that the name of the
The West
organization?
Virginia
That's right.
Environmental Council, yes.
Okay. And I'll be interested to hear about that. But I think on the let's just stop briefly on the Trump thing. I think it's important to keep in mind, I think it's true that we have an ideal that every nobody is above the law, but in real history, that's not actually true. Well, it's only partly true. And usually, if you overthrow or criminalize a king or a president or whatever, you have to kill him. Yeah, you know, I mean, that's most of history has been that. You know, there's no prison that'll work. You can't do anything else because you've got a political schism that's led to this catastrophe. Mm-hmm. And so you have to, I think in order for it not to unwind in a way like the pre-Civil War era did in the United States, you have to move forward with, you know, judgment, but great firmness, you know, on a number of fronts. And the number of issues that are dividing Americans now have grown, not diminished. Right. The number of, some of it's not all their own doing. There's externalities. The world has changed. It's a multipolar war. It's not just the one that we grew up with in the 50s or 60s or 70s. And so finding the foundation of unity in our, enough unity, why are, what is it that makes us a country? What is an American? The answers to those questions are not so easy. They probably were never easy. So, but they're very difficult now. And a conviction or acquittal of Trump, a fairly an important point, but in a way, by itself, almost meaningless. You know, unless it has a context in which we go for. Otherwise, it's just another tabloid event, and somebody else will say, "Well, I'll do it like he did, but I won't get caught." Same thing. You know, all those themes and those ideas, or non-ideas, however you want to characterize Trump.
I think you do touch on something that I have found through all of this entirely fascinating. And it's cliche. I mean, there are reasons cliches exist, because there's so much truth to them. And it is that we are all more united than we think we are. But there are, what people don't understand is there's a lot of money being made at tearing people apart. And that is a hard message for a lot of people to understand. But when you really live amongst your fellow Americans, we are all more alike than we think. And honestly, I think we all enjoy life a lot more when we aren't inundated by the ideas and propaganda that is trying to tear us apart. I had a really interesting life experience when I was here in Delaware and had gone through a difficult time. I had to find some immediate housing, and I mean immediate. So it was summertime. Well, it was springtime. And there are these places down here in Delaware by the beaches, especially, that you can live seasonally. And that usually is April through October. Right. And so I chose one of these because it was convenient to where I was working, and it was a good, safe space. And it was just right up my alley. So I lived in an RV. In a massive RV park about half a mile from the beach. Uh-huh. And they are on top of one another. You know, you're very close to your neighbors.
Yes.
You just have your own little cocoon made of fiberglass.
You're right.
And I loved my cocoon. I was one RV off of the water. I could put my crab net in and get a couple crabs to have for dinner. And right. It was lovely. But I was surrounded in a sea of Trump flags and, wonderful visitors that come down on the weekends in the summer, you know, to enjoy the beach. A lot of them from rural areas, Maryland and Pennsylvania. And these people became my neighbors, and I was certainly the only independent on maybe in the whole party.
You mean the other people were, it was families or couples or what?
Well, independent politically and independent, like, oh my God, this woman's living by herself in an RV. So it was really interesting the way people related to me and the way I related to them. And really, we all became quite close. And
Was
we were
it a
so,
diverse group? I mean, what was it like?
no, everybody was white,
Everybody
and
was white, yeah.
there was no diversity.
Huh.
And there was nothing politically we agreed on, but we were all really good neighbors, and we were there for one another. And I enjoyed their company. I went out on my one neighbor's pontoon. Like, we all enjoyed one another.
So.
So it was a really interesting kind of social experiment for me to live there for, gosh, 7 months. And I felt loved. I felt taken care of, while I was at work. Neighbors would let my dog out. Like, it was a very familial and lovely place to be.
Were most
But
of the other folks working too, or were they,
I would say it was about 50% retirees,
Right.
older Caucasian Americans, and then the others were weekenders, hardworking folks coming down on the weekend to enjoy the beach, And we would look out for each other's things. If a storm came and, I knew my neighbors were going to be gone, I would, make sure their grill cover didn't fly off and, all that kind of stuff we do for each other. But
Right.
if we had gotten down and dirty, which I, we had these conversations, we couldn't have been more different politically.
Yeah.
So it
For
was just, it
conservative
was,
people or mostly or what? Just Trumpers or what?
oh, hardcore,
Oh, really, huh?
Oh
Wow.
yeah. And
Yeah.
I mean, I felt
And
like I
what were
was
the reasons? Were the reasons like grievances against
economy. It
somebody?
was, again, it was this regurgitation, economy. I don't want, my money going to, support, hungry black kids,
Right,
like,
yeah,
and I'm just gonna, that's,
right.
these are things that they would say,
I know.
I,
Yeah,
it's
sure.
a selfish way. But when you actually sit with them, if a hungry child came up to them, they would feed them.
Right.
Somehow this idea that is out there about, welfare or whatever their hang up is
Yeah.
not really who they are as people. They were lovely people and community oriented, but they've just become minions to an idea that they have to regurgitate. And
Interesting.
that was a sadness because
Are they
I
watching Fox News all the time? Is that?
absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, right. Sure. Well, let's welcome your daughter, who was is she are you there, Lucia? Can you hear us?
She's ready. She's
All right. Well, listen, I understand you're working for the West Virginia Environmental Council and as a lobbyist, and so I have a small connection, not so much of the on the council, but we were I told your mother that we were down 2 weeks, 3 weeks ago for the AFL-CIO's legislative conference, which and so and my friend JB and I we were given an assignment: go find a moderate Republican. That's what we were told. We found one, George Miller. Okay, I think it's over in Morgan County,
Sure.
and even though he had to lecture us a little bit about how lazy workers were, he never and he nonetheless in the end said, "Oh well, whatever you guys want, okay, whatever I'll do." You know, kind of.
Oh.
We wanted him to not vote against and stop the reduction in unemployment benefits from I think 26 to 12 weeks and. Money. I don't think that made it through in the end, actually, or it hasn't yet. They may call a special session to do that. But so it was a little bit successful. He voted with us. But nonetheless, I just got to tell you, they're going down there. Most of the delegates, they didn't want to talk to us at all. It was really pretty eye opening about the. So I'm really interested to hear about your experiences and what your reaction to the legislative session was from the standpoint of the environmental issues.
Sure. So
tell us.
Yeah. So this is my second year lobbying with the West Virginia Environmental Council, and E-Council has been a voice of the legislature since 1989. So we've been around for a long time, but have been fortunate to kind of regain a consistent presence the past, you know, 5+ years. So, you know, it's always a new challenge, especially with the supermajority this year after the most recent election. So we kind of went into this, you know, making sure that we, you know, had a strategy to work across the aisle and to find common ground, because as you also can probably assume, you know, anything climate related is pretty politicized, even nationally, but especially here in West Virginia right now, you know, as we go up against coal and big oil and, you know, fight for common sense protections for West Virginians, that can somehow become controversial. So we definitely had our work cut out for us, but another strategy that E-Council kind of took was that we took the whole year to kind of build up certain campaigns around our legislative priorities. So we determined our priorities for 2023 early on in 2022, basically a little bit after the 2022 legislative session. So that way we worked all year long to contact legislators and build grassroots support for some of the bills that we were going to be advocating for. So that was really fruitful in the end. We were able to get several productive bills passed where normally we're playing defense on a lot of things and just trying to stop really, really bad bills. But this year we actually had some momentum which allowed us to pass a few good environmental bills.
So what are the top priorities that you have?
Yeah. So we had several priorities ranging from like energy to clean water and then public lands. So some of our energy priorities were to pass a community solar bill. And I can go, you know, through all these in more detail, but I'll just kind of outline them all.
Yeah, right.
Community solar was one of our top priorities. Securing more funding for the West Virginia DEP Office of Oil and Gas. We kept an eye on hydrogen legislation, because that's a new energy source that, you know, West Virginia has been looking into. We keep our eye on any nuclear energy development since the nuclear energy ban was lifted last session. And then carbon capture and sequestration was another big topic this session as well. And then flipping to our clean water priorities, we worked on the PFAS Protection Act. And then we worked on several public lands bills to try to, you know, protect our public lands from being opened up to ATV or RV use and things like that.
So I understand that KOA, for example, is, let me back up. I understand there was a change in the state park system's rules where the director of a park now has the authority to contract concessions on the state parks land. So for example, Canaan Valley, or I think there's one in Morgan County too, where there's a proposal that KOA has to, I heard, over 350 sites in the, is it Cape and Springs area?
Cape
yeah. Mm-hmm. Is that an issue that's, this having the state parks operate concessions directly? I assume the Republicans want that because they don't want to pay for the parks and they'd rather have fees and concessions help pay for the parks. But you know anything more about that?
Yeah, this was a topic that we fought pretty hard last session, was the privatization of our state parks. And so basically, you know, we've seen this kind of business model fail in some of our state parks over the years where these private companies come in and if the park isn't as successful as they intended, you know, they can default on their loans and then the park kind of falls apart. And there's also concerns, like you said, about, you know, pricing out West Virginians from coming to these parks as they become, you know, fancier and have more options. It's can be more expensive to even go visit it. And then of course, just, you know, you know, building them out more is, you know, an environmental concern, and we want to make sure that we're preserving the integrity of the park and the natural environment that people also come to enjoy, you know. So we're definitely keeping our eyes on these developments, and that was something that we worked on last year too, was to get an amendment in that bill to say that these proposals have to go through the DNR and a few other, you know, chains of commands before they can just be, you know, signed off on. So I did see
that. So you can't do any, you can't just do any concession that the director might want to. Someone comes in and offers him a bribe or some money to do some deal. And you can't, there's some restrictions on the kind of deals they can do.
There is some restriction. And I also believe I can go back and get you more, like, more specific information, because again, it's been 2 years since I worked on this, but I also believe that there has to be like a public hearing, and I think it has to go through DNR and Commerce, I believe. Right. So there's a few mechanisms in place so that, you know, like you said, a deal just can't be struck up, you know.
Well, and right. It's funny that we're talking about this, because I was just sharing my experience about living temporarily in an RV park.
Yeah, I'm at a park.
And it is a huge issue when Lucia is talking about, you know, water quality. What we're dealing with in Delaware is, you know, becoming an issue everywhere, especially in West Virginia with increased flooding. Here is the sea level rise. And when you put that amount of people in a very concentrated space, there were several times in the summer that I lived there that there were major septic failures. Because the ground was so saturated,
mm-hmm.
With sea level rise. And it's something 20 years ago when they built the RV park, they did not anticipate and plan for. So I think what West Virginia, you know, can use as a model, there should at least be some sort of oversight that plans for the future to prevent water contamination in these places. And I don't know what the privatization, how any oversight is going to happen.
It would be harder, because then you know, the only way you can fix something is to, when you have to charge somebody with an offense, you know,
right.
And then it's handled by prosecutors and, you know, the whole thing. And then, yeah. You know, it's probably not the best, you know, way to go about it. Well, I have, you know, an additional concern here. I understand that, for example, the leadership of the labor movement was invited by Manchin to sit in on a meeting with Bill Gates. And I can't remember some other people related to converting some of the coal-fired power plants in the state to nuclear.
Mm-hmm.
And, and at the meeting, you know, Josh Sword, who's the president, he kept asking this question. He says, well, you know, have you, I mean, the last time anyone tried to do, you know, nuclear power plants, they, you it sounds really great, but you can't figure out what to do with the waste, you know? So, and if you can't figure out what to do with the waste, eventually you're going to have a big problem and you're going to have to shut it down, you know? Yeah. So they kept asking that question, but they kept, Gates personally kept saying that problem has been solved. Does that make any sense to you? I mean, I haven't heard that there's a solution to the waste of nuclear fission, but maybe somebody else has.
No, I mean, there's certainly technologies to store it, but, you know, it's not reliable, and it's not, you know, you can't store it forever. This stuff sticks around forever. And so I think, this is exactly a concern that eCouncil has, and it's why we're following nuclear legislation that might be introduced. It's just because we don't feel like there's a safe long-term storage option available right now. And not to mention, you know, the cost of investing in bringing nuclear to West Virginia. You know, we could be focusing on more renewable energy instead. And, you know, the time that it takes to build these facilities, all of it just doesn't make a lot of sense environmentally and economically. So, you know, we're just kind of watching developments. Like I said, the nuclear ban was lifted last session, which means that now West Virginia can have nuclear projects come and locate here. I think they were thinking of putting a test reactor or some kind of reactor pilot program at West Virginia University to be part of like their research and part of the university. And then the only bill really related to this year was House Bill 2896, which aimed to make West Virginia an agreement state with the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission, which meant that basically if we became an agreement state, we would be able to kind of process our own nuclear waste instead of, I think right now we send it to like D.C. and Maryland, that area. But we had concerns with this bill. We don't want West Virginia handling nuclear waste. It also would have costed the DEP, our Department of Environmental Protection, $9 million, up to $9 million, which they don't currently have and are already kind of underfunded and understaffed in some other offices. And the initial language in the bill allowed West Virginia to take nuclear waste and store it like from other states, other places, basically opening us up to be like a nuclear dumping ground.
Yeah,
and
right.
That was extremely concerning. So that language got amended out. And then because of the fiscal note, the Senate Finance Committee decided not to run the bill and it ended up kind of dying on its own. And, you know, we had some of our member groups raise a lot of red flags around it too. So we managed to kind of avoid the issue this session, but I expect it to come back, especially if, you know, the senator and some of our legislators are looking at potential nuclear projects to come locate here.
Well, I think that goes hand in hand with one thing that I know Lucia worked really hard on and kind of made me aware about was that, you know, the number of mine inspectors, right? Like we are so lax in West Virginia already on how we're monitoring these, you know, fuel systems, and how could we add an entirely new, more dangerous storage situation when we can't even properly inspect and ensure safety around what we already have going on? I think that's number one. And number two, I think what is going to be really helpful, hopefully, to kind of squash or quelch or put at bay this the talk of nuclear waste and power in West Virginia is how terrible the nuclear power plant that was built in Georgia recently. It was 3 years behind schedule and cost three times as much as expected. So since then, and this is just recent, since then, South Carolina backed out of their nuclear plant that they were going to build, and some other states are doing the same because, like Lucia said, it is clean, the first part, the part that makes the energy, but it's the waste that is so dangerous, and it is proving to be completely cost prohibitive. So hopefully that will help that fight for next legislative session.
Well, let me ask one more question about the hydrogen issue, since that came up, because my understanding is that the hydrogen has a lot of promise, but that the problem is how do you store the energy, and whether or not it's the efficiency. In other words, you got to put in like they had a big announcement about fusion power, what, 6 weeks ago or a couple of months ago, right? And the argument was, well, for the first time in all the experiments, we have gotten more energy out than we put in to make it happen. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering about the hydrogen thing, because that seemed to be different technology, of course, but similar issue. Is there enough? It seemed very clean, but how do you store it, and can you get more energy out of it than you're putting in to make it, kind of thing? Is there any, what's going on with the hydrogen question, as far as you know?
Yeah, so this year E-Council you know, committed to monitoring this legislation, and you know, said that we would only support the development of hydrogen energy if it was green hydrogen, which means hydrogen that's going to be made by renewable energy, using renewable energy. So I think there is a plan, you know, there's the ARCH2 Appalachian Regional Clean Hydrogen Hub project that the bipartisan infrastructure law made possible. So that is a project that West Virginia has applied to get one of those hydrogen hubs coming to West Virginia. And my understanding, a big piece of this is the color of hydrogen that it's going to be. So like I said, green hydrogen is made by renewable energy. Blue hydrogen, I believe, is the would be the type of hydrogen energy that West Virginia would get through this ARCH2 program, which would be powered by natural gas, which is something that we don't really support, you know, furthering, you know, the use of fossil fuels. But a big piece of this and why it's able to be called blue hydrogen is because it would go hand in hand with carbon capture. So there would have to be a carbon capture facility built next to this hydrogen hub to kind of capture some of those carbon emissions that are going to be released from burning, you know, natural gas. And that allows it to be blue because it's a little bit more environmentally friendly if we're capturing the carbon and then, you know, potentially sequestering it, which is a whole other, you know, idea and, you know, still being tested to see if that is even, you know, a viable option for us when it comes to reducing our emissions. So there was a hydrogen power task force created this legislative session, which initially there was a lot of language in the bill to study green hydrogen options. A lot of that was stricken out, and it's now saying blue hydrogen and hydrogen powered by fossil fuels, which is unfortunate, but expected here in West Virginia. So we're going to be monitoring the development of that task force. They're basically being put together to study hydrogen energy a little bit more closely. And look at some of the possibilities for West Virginia. And then there were several bills relating to like carbon offset agreements and things like that, which again would open up the possibility to have a carbon capture facility with this hydrogen hub.
I also understand that there's a West Virginia has in addition to these three or four layers of natural gas deposits down below, also there's a geothermal hot spot or a couple in the state, and I seem to remember that that was a possible energy development project as well that Senator Manchin was at. I heard it from him actually. Do you know anything about that?
I don't know any of the latest developments, but I did initially hear about that as well and have followed it a little bit.
Right, because that would be a fairly clean operation, right? If you could figure out how to engineer it, but
yeah, essentially, I believe.
How do you like doing lobbying?
I really enjoy it. You know, it has its challenges, but I think this is such a unique moment for West Virginia, as you know, our nation and our globe, you know, really commits to reducing our emissions and, you know, trying to transition away from fossil fuels. It has its unique challenges for our state, but there's a lot of opportunity there. And you know, I think, you know, first and foremost, we want to make sure that our state's protected, you know, when and if, you know, climate impacts come. You know, we're already seeing them with, you know, exacerbating flooding across our state and heat waves and things like that. So the more that we can plan ahead and kind of mitigate some of these impacts, you know, the better it's going to be for our state. And, you know, we've always been an energy producing state. And I think, you know, we have to continue with that transition if we, you know, don't want to get left behind. So there's a lot of economic opportunity to invest in renewable energy. And there's, you know, countless public health and environmental benefits that come with that as well. So I think
historically, energy has been viewed, if that's your primary product, you know, it's generally been viewed as a curse. Most places in the world, you know, whoever has the most guns and money gets control of the resource.
Right.
And when they do, there's not much economic development other than energy that spreads around it very much, partly because it's so cash rich, right? Whether it's diamonds or oil or coal, you know, you end up with this very powerful tendency in the ruling elements, you know, for get the cash and maybe spend some benefits if you want to be benign, a benign kind of ruling thing. Or be like vultures and just take it and go, right? But nonetheless, I mean, the idea of having sustainable economic development where, you know, it's not just everybody, you know, getting a check like in Alaska, right, you know, from the oil business, okay, every year. But everybody has better jobs, jobs that include, that require better education, for example, higher skilled jobs, people have incomes, because in my view, I mean, the biggest problem in West Virginia is poverty, above all others. But so I'm interested in a way in thinking about when you said, well, we have a long tradition of energy and maybe we should stay that way. I kind of think about it like Norway. You know, Norway used its energy resources to produce the highest education, best school system in the world. I think it's rated the best right now. And to diversify its economy away from energy. And so is the diversification of the economy also a part of the picture of the Environmental Council? I mean, or is that just sort of a separate question and you're dealing strictly just with the energy?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it's not one of our like specific priorities, but I think that goes hand in hand with like, you know, how we address the climate crisis too. You know, there's, it affects everything. It affects everyone's way of life. And I think that if we want to transition to a cleaner world, that's going to mean especially diversifying our West Virginia economy. So I do agree with you that, you know, there's ways for us to, you know, make use of our people and our state and our resources in a healthy and sustainable way. And people are looking for these, you know, opportunities, job opportunities, economic opportunities that don't involve, you know, going in a mine or drilling oil and things like that. So, you know, West Virginia has a population crisis right now too. You know, we're experiencing a brain dump. Young people are leaving the state. People want to be able to stay in West Virginia and thrive in wherever their interest lies, you know, whether that's teaching or environmental or, you know, nursing, what have you, they you want the opportunities to be here. And I think right now they aren't. And that's also something we need to focus on as well. So above our energy transition, I agree with you that, you know, we need to be pouring into our people and our state and our resources, you know, and that's not happening right now. They're cutting PEIA and, you know, doing all sorts of tax cuts that are going to have, you know, impacts on people in various ways. So, you know, right now, West Virginia is saying they're open for business. And I think that's always kind of been our model. And I think we need to, you know, look at that differently moving forward.
All right. No, well, you know, it sounds exciting. Yeah.
To me. Thank you. I want to quickly touch on one more bill that really impacts the Eastern Panhandle. And this is one of our huge victories is helping to pass the PFAS Protection Act. So PFAS are forever chemicals that are produced when you create plastics and, you know, they're really part of our petrochemical industry, which, you know, is very present in the southern part of the state. And in West Virginia, in the Eastern Panhandle, PFAS has been found in firefighting foam. So we have a huge hotspot of it here in the Eastern Panhandle because of the guard base in Martinsburg. PFAS used to be in their training firefighting foam. So it's seeped into our water supply. So there was a resolution passed for the DEP to study PFAS pollution across the state. And unfortunately, it was found in 130 of our raw water sources across the state, with the Eastern Panhandle being a huge hotspot and really all across the state. And so we worked with the DEP and one of our member groups, West Virginia Rivers, to complete this study and found that this chemical is in water affecting close to 700,000 West Virginians. And so we created this PFAS Protection Act to require the DEP to develop action plans to identify the sources of PFAS in raw water and then work with those industries who are, you know, polluting this chemical. So it would require them to monitor and report their PFAS discharges. And then it also directs DEP to adopt the newly issued EPA PFAS standards as well when it comes to looking at our drinking water. So our raw water was tested. They're now going to be testing treated water and unfortunately expect to find it in our treated water as well. So it's really something to be aware of, especially in the Eastern Panhandle here. you're probably going to be hearing more about PFAS and how to mitigate the impacts in our wells and our water systems, our water utilities. And it's really important that this bill, you know, aims to hold industry accountable, not our water utilities. The cost to clean this up should not be falling on our ratepayers and West Virginians. So
what's the, how do you spell this?
Yeah, it's PFAS.
PFA. Okay.
And it stands for a much more complicated.
It's a byproduct of plastic production.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Chemical that so like Teflon, anything waterproof, like 3M waterproofing that goes on like furniture or baby clothing.
But does it form a solution or is it a micro thing of some sort in the water? I mean, is it like a particle or is it like polluting the water? Like, I put poison in your drink today.
No, it's just like, it's just a compound that doesn't break down. Lodges in, it's microscopic. Of course it lodges in your body, can cause different health impacts. I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Dark Waters, but the DuPont plant up in Parker, that was PFAS. And that was kind of what started the pollution here in West Virginia. Like my mom said, with, you know, manufacturing Teflon and the other products that they made up there. So it's basically contaminated, you know, a large part of our state.
Is there a documented health impact? I mean, for example, I mean, do the hospitals see people coming in or doctors? I mean, do we have data on what the health impact?
Yeah. A lot of data was initiated after the DuPont spill in Parkersburg. And then I can also get you our resources that kind of highlights the health impacts that have been found. You know, this research is ever developing. Like I said, the EPA just came out with their new PFAS standards. We actually had the opportunity to talk to Senator Capito a little bit about this as well, because she is from the area with the initial PFAS contamination. So she's really passionate about this on a federal level, you know, has worked to put together PFAS task force and things like that. So it had a lot of statewide support.
She's responsive to this. That's interesting.
We ran into her at the state capitol, and she, you know, I told her a little bit about the bill, and she was really excited and thankful that we were doing that, and was anxiously awaiting the EPA standards to come out, because they came out just kind of right after the legislative session. And then ran into her again in DC for another work trip I was on, and the bill had just passed. So I told her, and she was very excited and thankful again.
Oh, cool.
So that was great to get her support. And, you know, this was a good moment for eCouncil to, you know, come to the table on an issue like this and really be a stakeholder. That's something, you know, that we are working on too, as we try to get things passed. So, you know, we were able to, you know, come together with industry and all the other people that this was going to affect and come up with a bill that everyone agreed on and got it passed, which felt huge. And this is something we're super proud of. And, you know, we're going to continue to monitor PFAS and clean up the drinking water for West Virginians. So,
well, and I want to pipe in on this one, because as a supporter of the West Virginia Environmental Council and other environmental groups throughout the state, I'm speaking to this not as Lucia's mother, but as a person, as a West Virginia resident who raised their children in West Virginia and cares about the economy and the future of West Virginia. It is so important. And I think one of the biggest things to realize about this PFAS bill that they were able to get passed is that it was bipartisan. It was probably the most beautiful thing I've seen happen out of the West Virginia state legislature, because it was how politics are supposed to work. Unfortunately, when you go to Charleston and watch what happens there, mostly it is just atrociously polarized, and the lobbyists were able to work across the aisle and people work together. There were several people that worked on this bill really diligently, Lucia being one of them. It's great to watch politics in action actually work when it is so hard. And I just want to put out there that these people, lobbyists, you know, can have a bad name, but they really work so hard and they put themselves in very vulnerable situations, uncomfortable situations. I mean, right. You know, I feel like, you know, Lucia, now this is her mother talking, like she's thrown to the wolves when she goes up there. but it's real, the work that they do. So I encourage every West Virginian to support their organizations that are doing this hard work, because there are successes. There are so many positive things that happen that sometimes get overlooked.
That's a good question. Maybe we can sort of close with that one in a way. Why is it that this campaign succeeded, but how did it make it through this ideological barrier that seems to be dividing the parties? For example, if you, I heard a lot of people at the state legislative conference for the AFL-CIO considering running as independents in elections, because they felt that when they ran as a Democrat, that something had happened now, and nobody on the other side would even talk to them. And so was there something unique about this campaign as opposed to so many of the other issues that allowed you to break through? Was it just that you guys worked on it real hard? You did really good job and some other campaigns didn't? I mean, how do you feel that it stands up?
Yeah, I think there's a few answers to that. I think, first of all, you know, this concerns, I think the study was able to prove that PFAS is in our water. It concerns, you know, over 130 of our water systems across the state. We had a really great visual map that had a red dot anywhere there was a PFAS contamination. And, you know, it was statewide. This affects over 700,000 West Virginians. That's a lot of West Virginians. And I think we were able to unite around wanting clean water to drink, right? That should be a right for everyone. And so I think that we were able to kind of depolarize, you know, the climate stigma. And this wasn't a climate bill, you know, this was just clean water. We want clean water. How are we going to achieve this? You know, what is the common sense plan that we can put in place to identify PFAS, hold polluters accountable, and then, you know, start to clean this up. Another thing that was helpful is in the House, there was a water resources committee put together. And so we had the chair of the water resources committee on this bill, Delegate Clay Riley, and he was able to be a Republican champion and sponsor of this bill. There was a bill introduced in the House and the Senate. So we were given the bill and ran around like crazy people the first few weeks of session, garnering co-sponsors. And I think because of what happened in Parkersburg and because PFAS has been present in West Virginia for a long time, people were familiar with it and did kind of feel like the legislature should be taking action on it. So we were able to get, like my mom said, work across the aisle and get Republicans and Democrats on board in terms of sponsoring the bill. We also had the Speaker of the House, Roger Hanshaw, signed on to the House version. So that was super helpful to have his, you know, leadership and support as well. So I think it was just something that people could unite around. People cared about it. You know, we had our materials broke down in each district. You could go by, this is how, you know, we convinced a lot of legislators. We would take them our materials, our info packet, and say, you know, what district are you? Okay, in your district, these are all the hits that you have. This is the amount of PFAS that's been found in your district, and this is the amount of people that it's affecting in your district. So it was really able to, you know, bring it home for each person. And, you know, they were able to sign on with confidence, knowing that this is something that's happening in their district. This is something that's going to help their constituents. And, you know, the health impacts are real as well. And people don't want to be drinking this stuff. So I think, you know, it was just, there was a lot of momentum there. There was a lot of bipartisan support. And this was just something that people cared about. So, wow. And like I said, the stakeholder meeting and being able to come to the table and be a player in that was huge as well. So we thank all of our partners to help make this happen.
Well, congratulations. I mean, that's quite an achievement, you know. I actually felt in the end that our ability to stop the unemployment cut was a big achievement too. Everybody worked.
Certainly.
I mean, it looked dim our hopes in the beginning, but it did get a little better. We had to put up with a little bit of abuse, but
thanks for your work as well.
you know. Well, thank you so much. I mean, this is it's been very enlightening. And by the way, I hope you got I get this thing turned around and produced, and it takes me a day, but actually, it takes me about 15 minutes, but I have other things I have to do. Anyway, yeah, if you guys can help circulate, you know, this interview and get it around, then we'll
we'll
keep up the fire going. You know, I think it's great. I'm so glad that you guys made some good progress, and it sounds you picked up a lot of political education by doing it too. It sounds like
You know. Interested in following along at ecouncil.org. We're going to be, you know, working throughout this year as well to develop our priorities again. And we're putting together some energy campaigns. We're focusing on community solar this year and trying to get that passed in 2024. So there's going to be lots more work ahead. So we invite anyone to join us on the journey.
What's the, is there a website for that people can, for the?
Yes, it's wveecouncil.org.
Oh, that's easy. wveecouncil.org. Okay. That's easy to do.
And I am a contributor. I'm a very proud contributor. They do such great work, and every dollar is spent well, as these as all of the members and lobbyists know, it's nonstop. And so they can use our support, and it's a wonderful organization. And I do want to just say, I'm here in Delaware for 2 days, and I was watching the local news this morning, and I thought it was really interesting that a public-private partnership is happening at the Salisbury Airport in Easton, Maryland, where a landowner is selling to a solar farm a huge piece of land, and it is a solar farm that is going to 100% power the Salisbury Airport, which has become a very important economic tool in the Eastern Shore of Maryland and Delaware Beach area. That airport is well traveled now. A lot of people use it, and I think that's going to be really interesting to watch, and I hope more of those types of programs, you know, move into West Virginia. And I know that's one thing eCouncil, the West Virginia Environmental Council, is hoping to see happen, is an expanded solar. And I thought this one was specifically interesting because they were working directly with powering one entity, because a lot of the pushback you get with solar is like, well, it can't power everybody. It can't power everything, you know? So I thought this was,
the pushback on solar was mostly on its reliability for like high power implementations, not,
you know, like, can speak to that.
Yeah. Well, but, I mean, I mean, if you're going to run a steel plant, you know, you can't rely on whether the weather is going to be good. I guess you could. If you shut down a steel plant operation, it takes 2 days to start it up again. I happen to know that because I was in a steel plant and one of them stopped. Same thing with a big giant paper machine. You know, once they stop, they all gum up and everything. It takes a week to fix it.
Well, that's what's interesting about this partnership at the Salisbury Airport, is that all of that power is going to be stored and designated just for that. Of course, they'll have fossil fuel backup power.
Yeah,
right. But that's a way to you know, move forward.
Absolutely.
That the community solar in West Virginia, I'd love for Lucia to talk about that again, maybe in the future, because that, what I think I learned the most about when I was up at the at E-Day in Charleston, was that it is specifically designated to help ratepayers, to help energy consumers, the average person in West Virginia. It's aimed to help keep rates affordable, because you and I talk about poverty a lot, John, in our state. And so that is a big goal of this community solar program. And, you know, Lucia maybe can touch on that some other time.
For example, there's some resistance in the county here to turning your like orchard land, for example, into a solar farm. As I've heard resistance to that. I'm not quite sure whether how big it is or whether it means anything, but
yeah, I think you know, responsible siting is definitely something you have to look at when you're creating these solar arrays and projects. Community solar really aims to kind of use like buildings and, you know, schools and things like that to put their solar panels so that a whole community can potentially subscribe to the project and things like that. But yeah, this is a bill we got close to passing this year. It was introduced in the House and Senate. But we're going to have to come back next year to try to get it across the finish line. And we're going to be developing a community solar campaign throughout this year. So yeah, I'd love to come back and share more about that as it progresses.
Okay. All right. Well, what an introduction. Thank you so much. Really.
Thank you guys.
I appreciate it very much. I'll start paying dues this week. Right?
Oh, thank you.
All right. All right. Well, just anything else we got on the agenda here, Karen, for the day? I think this has been a great interview.
By the way, that thing that
says read AI there on the screen, that's my little bot that does an instant transcript of the discussion.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Well, now with Zoom, if you buy the Zoom Pro, whatever it is thing, I think it cost me $15 a month. Anyway, it gives you 20 different apps that you can, one of them is this one. You know, I don't know that I'll use it.
You don't
it.
Have a little bot that can take your bathrobe off and put a suit on for you?
I could. Well, I have the beach behind me. That's one, and that's a bot in a way, but yeah. I just got up late this morning. Okay, I'm sorry.
It's okay. I love it. I got up early and I am at the beach and I really wanted to mess with you and go out to the walk. So I had the real beach.
Out in front of the beach.
I wanted the real beach behind me.
Holding a crab, you know, right? All right. Exactly. Well, it's been great talking to you, you know, and Lucia, she's on the money. She's into it. She sounds like a pro. She's doing good.
I know. And trust me, they do hard work. What they do is, I'm in awe because I literally can spend about 3 hours in the Capitol building and then I feel like I need a shower and a drink.
Yes. Yeah, right. I know. It was daunting. It really was when we were down there. It was really daunting.
All the power to them and I support them in every way. And you know, right. It is always good to remember that there are little successes happening and in a world where everything can seem like it's falling apart.
I was going to try to get, you know, Brother Unger on next week sometime, or maybe a week sometime in the future. Because, you know, he's, he has a great story. He resigned because, that's a good question to ask him why he resigned.
Well, yeah, let's have him answer that question. I would love to reconnect. It's been years. I remember when we had him on the original radio show. And yeah. I have not followed, so it will be a nice.
I always like he, you know, I always enjoyed talking theology with him more than politics because you know he's got a very philosophical attitude toward things.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
but mm-hmm. And also I'm not sure that you know what did Jesse Jackson say? God is not finished with me yet. I think. I think Brother Unger thinks the same. He might
so
run.
Does Sister Karen.
You know, so God is not finished with me yet. Anyway, but he's always an interesting guy, and he has a lot of. It's very interesting his discussion about why he gave up. He took a job as a magistrate and did it for about 2 weeks, and found out he claims. You know, sometimes people say things and you say, gee, you know, you should have known that. But he claims that he did not know that he could have absolutely no impact as a magistrate on whether or not someone busted for dope went immediately to jail or not. And he found out that if someone appeared and charged with anything that the cops wanted to charge him with, okay, that he had two choices. Well, you put up bail, but if you can't put up bail, you go to jail, period. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Or you can enjoy the privilege of pleading guilty, and then you're required to sentence within sentencing guidelines, right? Yeah, I mean, and sure. Barring something. And if I'm going to sit, I'm just going to be a guy with, you know, with a say, hey, go to jail, pay the money or go to jail, pay the money or go to jail. And he said he quit. Yeah. That wasn't what he had in mind, and so now he's teaching community college at Blue Ridge.
Okay.
And being the pastor of three Harpers Ferry churches, so two of which can't afford to have a pastor. So
wow.
You know, anyway. Mm-hmm. And then he got remarried, you know. And I think his wife, Marty Steiner Unger, she's going to become an Episcopal priest, I believe. I think she's being ordained this spring or something. Imagine that, a Lutheran and an Episcopal priest.
Are you walking into a bar to tell a joke? Imagine an Episcopal.
Yeah. An Episcopal and Lutheran priest walked into a bar, and the bartender said, why the long face? That's actually a Celine Dion joke. I think I just morphed it over there. But
oh, no. Well, it's funny because in my absence in Shepherdstown, West Virginia, I guess Lutheran, I believe, minister, is a pastor. I don't know. What are they pastors?
Oh, Karen Erskine Valentine. Yes.
Karen Valentine came to town. Uh-huh. So when I started coming back to Shepherdstown and resurfacing, when my resurfacing happened, there were several times that I was really taken aback. One time it was like 6:30 in the morning. I was walking a dog and ran into another guy walking his dog. And he said, you know, I've always known you to wear so many hats and you've done so many things. I didn't see you becoming a pastor. I said, I didn't either.
That's great.
I had no idea what he was talking about. So it was,
really?
It was hysterical when I figured it out. And then just about 3 weeks ago, I was filling up the gas tank at Rocks there in Shepherdstown. And a familiar face, I won't mention a name, but a townie, you know, knocks on the window. Hey, Karen, how's it going? How's the church? And I said, the church? And then he said, yeah, I see your name up on that thing at the church. I said, that's not me.
Have you met, what the?
No, I think I'm just going to have to go introduce myself.
Yeah, you should. Yeah, right.
Just in case she gets any backhanded comments about being Karen.
Right. Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah, right. It could go the other way.
I have no idea what she's going through.
Yeah, right. You know, right. We can only imagine. So
yes.
Oh, so, God. That's great. Well, yes, yeah. I didn't know that you had left before she arrived, or I wasn't sure when you left town, actually.
It was right around the same time, because she was at the church. I remember seeing when you turn on Sharpsburg Pike to go up to Hagerstown, she was at that church on the corner.
Right.
And that church closed and sold. And I guess that's when she moved to Shepherdstown. But I had no idea. I just thought it was always funny when I would drive to Hagerstown that I would see Pastor Karen Valentine. So so yeah, she took my place. I moved away, and the town had to have a Karen Valentine.
They had to have at least one. Yeah, I know. Do you're not on Facebook, right?
I am not. I have toyed with rejoining that circus, but I don't know. I'm pretty happy.
Well, I learned to basically avoid if someone wanted to have an argument with me or something like that, I dropped. I don't want to have arguments on Facebook, you know.
No,
it's a good place. It's a pretty good platform for sharing info.
I know, and that's what I miss about it.
If you don't control your friends list, then you end up in, it's a pain in the ass. And also, if you're not careful, you can end up being, targeted by various groups. But I had a great thing. I just reject everything that I don't know, or that who's not a really good friend to somebody I don't know.
Sure.
And I haven't had any problems at all. I haven't been hacked, all. So
I'll say it's brewing.
Well, I'm just looking for ways to, when you're doing internet radio, you have to, the social media platforms, and finding out a way to participate on as many of them as you can without, I see Facebook now wants to charge you $35 for the boost, you know, which will give you, they claim, 22,000 hits. They claim that. They're probably not lying. It's probably true. And
yeah, I might do a kind of a business page, a less personal page, but I would certainly share what we're doing on that.
Yeah, have an issue page or something
exactly.
like that.
Exactly.
I do that with my socialist economics thing, you know.
I will look into that in the meantime. I hope you have a great week, and I can't wait to see you next
Friday. There's also TikTok. Before they get banned, we could circulate all of our programs in China and Far East.
Yeah, our dance moves as well.
Okay. All right. Well, Karen, thank you so much for joining this morning. And I'm glad your daughter got hooked up. She's doing good work. You know, the Lord's work. All right. So that's, I guess we should, a good message for all of us to try to keep up that during the week. Thank you so much. All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.